Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, streaming Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. We have an extra special guest to help guide us through this episode. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Kit. I'm really, really excited to be here. As I've said before many times, you know, nothing if not really passionate about Guardians. So thank you for having me on board.
Delighted to have you here. We have a tier on our Patreon that allows people to mandate that we watch and review certain movies here on the show. That is what has happened. But there's an even higher tier for only the staunchest and bravest of supporters that can decide to be on said episode. Very few have taken advantage of it. And Sean, that is what you have done. So you are here to talk about your love. We always read, we try to read like the patrons' reasoning for why they chose the film. But you're here to tell us yourself why it is that you chose Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Before you do that, though, I want to know why you chose to support Streaming Things.
Oh, I would love to get into that. So as some of you may know, if you're patrons who were here in the beginning, I was on one of the special episodes talking to Steve when it was just 10, right. 2 summers ago. Oh my God, that was 2 years ago. That's insanity to me. But that was when I had actually first gotten onto the show. And I don't know, the summer of 2022 was a really difficult time for me. I was just going through, honestly, a lot of stuff. I don't know. I think being a teen and then being in your just entering your early 20s, like there's so much stuff going on. And for whatever reason, that was just a difficult year for me coming off of sophomore year of college. I had various stuff going on and I don't know. I got really into Stranger Things. I decided to binge it at the mention of a close friend being like, hey, check it out. I thought, all right, I'll give season one another try. And I loved it. And I thought, I just got to find some way to like talk about this show or like look at it. And you guys were just coming back from like the pandemic break. Such a wild time to like join, but it was awesome. So yeah, your guys' Stranger Things 4 coverage. That was when I found you. And I don't know, something about like it felt like friends and honestly like found family just like talking about the show and getting to like, you know, you guys were just big enough that I felt like there was a good audience, but also just small enough that it felt intimate. And I really enjoyed like, you know, you guys responded to stuff. You weren't like some like big corporate imaginary entity. Like you guys were actually interacting with us. And that meant a lot. So really special place for Streaming Things there.
Well, we appreciate that. It was a special time for us too. As we've said many times, right on the back of a lot of weird upheavals in our own lives. And we leaned on the show as a distraction from that ourselves. So maybe that's what you sensed.
Absolutely.
The island of broken toys that you could join.
And so coming to Guardians, so I'll set the scene. 2014, I'm 13 years old.
My heart.
Same.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So my father had been diagnosed with lung cancer. And he had gotten through his rounds of chemo. He was fine. But come the end of near the end of 2014, around the time this movie is being released, he passes away. He was my one parent that really was with me consistently through most of my life. That was my really one parent. He did everything. And so he passed away, and my world was kind of shattering, as it does when you're 13. Not that your world isn't already shattering when you're dealing with so many, you know, developmental things, but then having to move in with family that, you know, and if any of them ever hear this on air, I love you guys, you know, all of this. But it was hard because they were extended family. I didn't see them as the family, you know? So yeah. On top of that, on top of a new school, having to start with all friends from scratch. So it was rough. So a week after that, you know, we're at his celebration of life, and I have a distant cousin who just comes up to me when we're sitting down, just finished dinner. I'm just chilling. And he says to me, "Hey, Sean," he says, "and, you know, I saw this trailer for this movie, and I don't know. It looks pretty cool. You know, you like this kind of stuff. So I thought I'll show you it." And it was the Guardians 1 trailer. And I thought, you know, interesting, whatever. I'll check it out. I do eat up Marvel stuff at this time. I was a simple man. I still am to this day. I love animals. I like crazy action. You know, I love Marvel. I love superheroes. I was all in for that. And I don't know what it was about it. I saw the different heroes. I liked the vibes the trailer had. I rewatched it before I came onto this podcast, and I'm like, wow, what a throwback. 10 years ago almost. Oh my God.
Yeah, that is coming up. The 10-year anniversary of Guardians of the Galaxy 1. It's nuts.
And so I get this movie. The way that I get it is I get it at a Secret Santa that same year. So I went home that night and I watched it, and I saw the scene where it opens up with, you know, Peter and, you know, his mom. And what did she die from? Cancer. It hit. So so Peter's story, not just Rocket's, but Peter's story really hits me hard through the first and second movie. And what he goes through in the Avengers movies too, all throughout these movies leading up to the third one, just they've had such a huge impact on me because of the journey these characters have gone through. And it's crazy to me that three movies have this big of an impact, but I truly believe that these movies somehow, they came into my life at points when big things were happening, when I needed them. I think media comes into people's lives for a reason at certain times. I truly believe that. And I think certain media especially hits your soul, and it was there when you needed it. I think there's nothing wrong with saying that media got you through a rough time in your life and that it'll be there. I still have a poster, the same poster I got when I first moved into my new home of Rocket Raccoon. It's been there for 10 years. It's still there. It's not left.
Hey, nice. Man, I dig it. I still got that same Kermit the Frog poster.
Do you really? A Kermit the Frog poster?
No, that would be you.
Cheer up, buddy.
I will say, just right up front for everyone who's listening, we are covering Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, so there will be spoilers for the first two Guardians movies if you have not seen them, so just be prepared for that. But Sean, I feel like you chose this movie because it is the culmination of all these characters' journeys and stories, and so it's a lot easier to talk about them when you pick this movie, as opposed to if you just went in cold and started with one or two.
The Guardians movies are so strange in general, including this third one. I remember when the third one ended, some of my friends, they posted, you know, memes. Like, there's one that they'll do with movies of for example, Game of Thrones, someone had the horse that how well it's drawn, kind of. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. And it'll have the first four or five seasons or six seasons, the horse looks perfectly drawn and wonderful. And then the last two of the seasons are a horribly, horribly drawn horse. The front of it is just the horrible thing. People will do that with the Guardians movies and just have it this amazing looking horse all the way through. It looks perfect, wonderful. And I agree with that. And I think there's something to be said that a trilogy of Marvel movies was so good. It was like S-tier Marvel all the way through. Guardians doesn't feel like it belongs in Marvel. It doesn't. Like, it's so unique and stands on its own. For the most part, I know people who've only seen the Guardians movies and maybe Iron Man, and they're like, these are amazing movies, you know? Whereas some other Marvel properties, you can't do that. So that's my criticism of the MCU is I only enjoy it as much as I do, and Endgame, for example, because I've seen everything that's happened with these characters, but I don't watch a lot of the new properties anymore, really. Guardians is mostly it, and some of the Avengers movies, you know? Not to say there aren't good properties, but there's something so special about Guardians that no one can really argue with, you know?
Steve, what about you? How do you feel? I don't think we've ever talked about our...
Yeah, I don't think so either. We haven't really done like deep dives into any of the Guardians movies, really. Even on offline, I don't think we've really talked a lot about the these three movies.
No, I don't typically talk to you a whole lot.
Who are you?
So how do you feel about volume three of the Guardians?
So it's
of Ga'Hoole.
It has Ga'Hoole. Now there's a pool, the Guardians of Ga'Hoole. When is someone going to make us watch that? No, so the Guardians of the Galaxy volume three came out last year in a very interesting time. Some people might come for me in the comments on this, but I actually didn't see this movie in theaters because this was sort of like, we're kind of tailing out of this phase of my life, but there's a phase in my life that's kind of still going where it was like, if we're not covering it for the show, I'm not seeing it because my time is so stretched thin as it is. I go to work during the day, I come home and it's like, we got three movies to watch before we have to record them and I have to do research on them. So yeah, like if it wasn't being covered specifically for streaming things, I was not consuming it. And this movie came out at like the height of that. So like I didn't get to see this movie. Eventually, when it came out on Disney Plus several months ago, I was able to watch it by myself. And I remember at the time thinking like, this is really good. This is a really good send-off for these characters. I think we'll get into it, but the last scene, the last like sort of song sequence before the first set of credits really hits hard, I think. But I honestly remember like the movie ended being like, that was pretty good. But like, I like the other two better. And so when I sat down to watch it for this recording on Friday, I kind of had that sort of in my mind. So I was really, okay, what is it about this movie that I like less than the other two? And at the end of the movie, I was like, you know what? I don't know if I do like it less than the other two. I think it's just it's just different than the other two in a way that I think is just not necessarily my cup of tea, but it's still good. Meaning, you know, I love the first Guardians maybe the most because it's that perfect blend of, I want to have a good time. Let me turn on this movie. There's a little bit of an edge to it. Just enough of an edge where it's just fun the whole way through. It's a romp. Right. Mm-hmm. The second one I think is also really good, but man, the last 20 minutes really fucking make me cry. Mary Poppins, y'all. It's a tearjerker for me. It crushes me. And then this movie is mostly like the last 20 minutes of the second movie, just spread out over 2.5 hours, which is again, is great and phenomenal. And it works because I'm crying at scenes. I'm emotional. But I think there's something like the dastardliness of the High Evolutionary is so well done. And a lot of people have a hard time watching this movie because of the animal cruelty aspect of it. And you know, I don't know if I understand where people are coming from with that, but the animal cruelty thing, like, I think it's just the design of the animals are so grim and gross. It's a little off-putting for me. And I think that's why, like, from a knee-jerk reaction, like, I don't like looking at this. But it's not because it's bad. It's an intentional choice. And I think it's done very, very well. But I do think if I were to go back and rewatch the Guardians movies, I think this is the one I'll definitely rewatch it and have a good time with it. But this is the one I'm like, am I in the mental capacity to get through, to consume this at the moment? I don't know if I am because it is a lot of gut punches. That being said, as difficult as some of the subject matter is, I think they do maintain a lot of the spirit and the jokes and the fun. Like there's a lot of fun to be had in this movie as well. Mm-hmm. We'll get into it, but there's a ton of, you know, scenes that are just knee slappers, just laugh out loud funny. I still think Mantis might be my favorite Guardian. I love Mantis so much. I know a lot of people like, I think a lot of people like Mantis, but they're never, usually it's like, I like Peter or Rocket or Drax, and I love all of them. But something about the way Mantis is such a good foil to all of the characters, especially Drax. I just like her role. And I feel like when she was introduced in the second movie, I think if you remove her from that team, that's like, I wish there was a Miss Mantis. But Kit, what do you think about Guardians Volume 3?
A huge fan of the entire Guardians trilogy. I think on my rewatch of 3, it was less so. So that's only the second time that I saw it, but only slightly. I found some of the needle drops to be more heavy-handed than in the previous two, in the sense that it was kind of like maybe James Gunn saying, "I'm doing the thing," whereas in the first movie especially, it was like, it was just a new thing. He was just doing what he was doing. You know,
when that
first movie came out, it was such a breath of fresh air. I've always leaned more toward irreverent cinema, and you know, I'm just an annoying person, really. But the way that that movie opened up, it was so stylized, and you got that bam, 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 bam. You know, and he's singing into that little creature and stuff.
It's so iconic. It's really iconic is what it is.
It is.
The first one will always be the best to me for that reason. I think the second one is my least favorite. I think the third act, all that stuff with Ego, just does not work for me very well. But I like all three of the movies. I do think it is a pretty phenomenal trilogy all the way through. I think that it's ironic watching this the same week that we had to watch The Rise of Skywalker, because Volume 3 is such the polar opposite of Rise of Skywalker in the sense that, like, way to stick the landing and honor each and every one of this giant cast of characters and you know, follow through on the emotional beats, most importantly of all, you know, and send them off in such a great way. Another thing about this movie that's so fascinating, and it struck me the first time, and you didn't see it in theater, Steve, so maybe you don't, and you're not as like chronically online, but
no, I'm not.
Who of the Guardians was going to die?
Oh, that was a big thing.
A huge thing. Mm-hmm. And everyone was voting Drax because Dave Bautista was very vocally like, "I'm fucking over the 6 hours in the makeup chair."
Yeah. That's why he's wearing a shirt for the runtime of this movie, because he didn't want to have his chest done up.
Oh. Like, this will be my last. And so that was like the best odds. If you're betting, Drax would give you the least return, you know? And I think James Gunn was aware of that discourse. And when you're watching this movie, there's all kinds of misdirects and kind of, it's in like Rise of Skywalker, it's in conversation with the fandom, but in a, like a fun, positive way throughout that I find really interesting. It's just for whatever reason. And I also think, I want to say this, I think the High Evolutionary is one of the best villains in the entirety of the MCU.
Yes.
I think he's
great.
He's really interesting. His motives are very clear and understandable. And he's like diabolical, you know? He's scary.
Narcissistic. He's horrifying.
I think it's so well done all across the board. It's just some things were a little sillier on my rewatch and just took some of the joy. And I find that with James Gunn in general. Like, when we watched the Suicide Squad together, James Gunn's
the
version.
Suicide Squad?
Squad. Not the bad Suicide Squad. Not that one.
You have to add the. It's cleaner.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with that movie. We all three saw it together.
Love it.
I think I rated it 5 stars. Mm-hmm. I was just fucking over the moon about it. And when I rewatch it, I don't feel that way. So that happens with James Gunn to me a lot. But I've really enjoyed each of these movies. I really liked Volume 3, just not as much this time. This movie's fucking gross.
It is.
Like, it's rough.
Like, the whole organic spaceship planet thing, like that whole era is wild.
The design of the Hellspawn is really off-putting and like, awful.
Everything is really gross about this movie.
Yeah.
But it's super fun. I was excited to talk with you about it, Steve, because of, you know, the Nathan Fillion that James Gunn always works in.
Just you wait. We'll get to my dear Captain Malcolm Reynolds here in a moment.
And it's worth mentioning, too, that what James Gunn did was really fascinating, because the MCU started with Iron Man, who it's hard to remember now. You would have been, what were you, like 8 years old when Iron Man dropped?
I probably would have been, Sean? Yeah, seven yeah. or eight, yeah.
Well, Iron Man was not a not a popular comic book character.
When they announced an Iron Man movie, everyone was collectively like, him?
Nobody gave a fuck that Iron Man was getting a movie.
That's wild.
Nobody, Iron Man was not like, no kids were playing with Iron Man toys, you know?
Right.
It was not a thing.
That's fair.
So it's a, in retrospect, it's a bizarre way for the juggernaut that is the MCU to start with Iron Man. And Robert Downey Jr. just gave so much life to that character. But yeah, the Guardians is the same way. Mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy was a bunch of weird offshoot characters that only like super comic nerds even knew existed.
Yeah, I had never heard of the Guardians of the Galaxy until the trailer for the first movie dropped out. That was my introduction to these characters. I knew nothing about
them. Same here. Me neither. I had no idea.
And that's what James Gunn loves to do. You know, he did that with the Suicide Squad. He pulls these kind of ancillary fringe characters and really explores them. He finds joy in that because he's a big comic book nerd. So, but yeah, that's the history of my history with Guardians, a little bit of the history of the Guardians in general. Let's dive into what actually goes down in volume 3 of the mixtape and see what happens, right? It opens with raccoons in cages, a hand reaching in, intercut with, or cut to, a sad elder Rocket Raccoon, mm-hmm, to Radiohead's Creep, which... Yeah. You can't go wrong with Creep. That's always going to give you the vibes you need if you want to be sad.
Right. And I mean, the opening shot of the baby raccoon and the hand reaching into the cage, like, it really sets up the ominous. I love that introduction of not only, oh, this movie is going to be about Rocket, but also, you know, even though you haven't seen the High Evolutionary yet, you're already kind of petrified because the framing and composition of the hand coming in and reaching in to grab the little baby raccoons is really intimidating and imposing.
Yeah, it's definitely very cool. I think it's a way to open. And I wrote down here, we're reminded this is an intense focus on Rocket, but also with that song then, you know, transitioning to his eyes then as a real, you know, in present day, right? That the music in the background, we're always reminded that's so iconic, but it's also iconic to Peter. So we're reminded he has a big part in this story as well, as usual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about the MCU is you're reckoning with not just the first two Guardians movies, but events of all of the MCU, specifically Avengers Endgame. And this is the first time back to the Guardians since then, I think.
Thor, Love, and Thunder.
Indeed.
This was after Thor, Love, and Thunder, right?
Yes.
It was just last year. Yeah. It was the same year. And so you've got to deal with...
By the way, sorry, after I finished Volume 3, I went back and watched the Guardian scenes from Love and Thunder and was like, oh man, they did not spend any time on the special effects for Love and Thunder. This looks really rough when you watch them back to back. You can tell there's like completely different teams working on this.
But there's screaming goats that makes up for it.
That's true.
I can't even do it.
So it's interesting that you have to reckon with like the loss of Gamora and all kinds of things in addition to what they're trying to do in this movie. But we got Rocket sad jamming around their little reject town nowhere.
Can I just say, I had forgotten that this was a thing in this movie, but I find it absolutely horrifying that Rocket Raccoon is in charge of the town's music choices. Like whatever you were at the whims of Rocket's Zune. I hate it when people have their music turned up too loud in their car with their windows down as they're driving down the street. I would hate to live in a town where God damn it, the raccoon's sad. He's going to turn on Radiohead. Son of a bitch.
Yeah. Never give it to the sad guy. The aux cord. He's got the aux cord of nowhere.
No.
Quill is drunk, which we're led to understand is happening often nowadays, right? And it's really sad.
Yeah.
We get the whole bit about Cosmo and being a bad dog, which is very upsetting to Cosmo.
I love that little ongoing bit with Cosmo. Like, please tell me, you don't think I'm really bad dog. Take it back.
And Kraglin's like, no, I'm not. No, you are.
Yeah, it's such a good, like, that would be the thing if you wanted to fuck with a dog that actually had sentience. Yeah. That would be the thing to really take ruin their day.
And it's Cosmo is voiced by Maria Bakalova, who was first given to the world via Borat 2, subsequent movie film.
Yeah.
And by the way, she's a fucking, if you've never seen that movie, I cannot recommend it highly enough.
She's amazing.
She's a genius who holds her own against Sacha Baron Cohen. And she's actually going to be in next week's bonus episode, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Oh, hell yeah.
Cool. So that's awesome. But when I looked, I was like, who is that? It's Maria Bakalova. And then we get, you know, this whole bit. We got drunk Peter. He's sad. We got sad Rocket. Things aren't looking good for nowhere. Cosmo's a bad dog. he's trying to use Yondu's psychic arrow to ill effect. You know, things are not going well. And then Adam Warlock tackles Rocket through the window. Ooh. And it's really but I like right before that happens, yes. Rocket takes mm-hmm. his shirt off and we get to see his body and all the experimentations and augmentations that we've not really seen before. Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, right before that, I have a note here when Rocket takes out like a little key card thing, which is very important for later in the movie. And I just like, oh my God, can we just talk about Sean Gunn, I believe, does the motion capture, right, for Rocket. I'm pretty sure that's who does that.
I think so. I think you're right. At least in the other movies he was.
Right. Every movie that he's done the motion capture for, right? Everybody talks about Bradley Cooper's voice acting for him. And oh yeah, that's what got me sold on that character too. But like just the little emotion, the tiny details, they matter so much. And James Gunn, Sean Gunn, Bradley Cooper, they all work together to just create the little moments that show that like this is a very emotional, very complex, very dynamic being. So that was rough. There's just so much that was said there in that little look of the key card. It's a lot of, you know, rewatching this movie, I get a lot of value from that scene personally.
Yeah, there's a lot of details to mine. I think Gunn is always having fun, but really good at that.
Yeah, he's incredible at having fun, but also like really mining emotionality out of these characters that you wouldn't expect that mm-hmm. sort of stuff to come from. He's yeah. incredible at it.
And then Adam Warlock takes out Rocket and then defeats Nebula and Groot and Drax.
I love that part when Kraglin thinks he's going to get a little shot in on him and he throws the
air. Who threw this at me?
No. Will Porter as Adam Warlock is stellar. I love the aloof doofishness of him. He's great.
As a unabashed We're the Millers fan, I was loving this casting.
Those are the little bits that work for me comedy-wise. Because I know what you mean, Kit. Like, I've had moments, too, in this movie where, and I'll point it out, like, certain humor moments that I'm like, maybe didn't need that. But, like, here, it worked somehow. Because at the same time, I'm thinking to myself, you know, if the backdrop of, ooh, this character or this character, anybody could die in this movie, Nebula just gets fucking blasted across the room, you know? And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, is Gunn going to be that bold? And then, you know, Drax also gets fucking whacked across the room. And then it just gets down to, yeah, it's like anybody's up on the chopping block at this point. And it's only, mm-hmm. what, 15, 20 minutes in the movie? Not even.
And we're expecting somebody to die. And then Rocket's fucking dying. They pull out the med packs and we see what they can do. It's really clever because it heals Mantis's arm that has been snapped. But then when they put it on Rocket, he starts seizing out. And we learn that there's like a kill switch in there, right? There's more memories of his childhood.
He's like a cybernetic being. So like the cybernetics within him, there's a kill switch where if you try to like alter them or repair them, it'll just kill his, because he's proprietary
technology.
Yeah.
But we get more memories of his childhood and we get this like, it looks like Sid from Toy Story's bedroom and his flashback briefly when we meet like Floor and Teefs and the gang. But that's what I thought of, was like when like the Barbies with the spider legs rolled out in Toy Story.
Dude, when little baby Rocket, who's like all scared and he's got his head shaved, and the first thing he says is, hurts. It's so sad.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I always think about when they pick up the dirty rag and lick it and put it on the wound. I'm like, that's not helping. That's going to get it infected.
That seems to be like a tiny 1% of the problem that he's dealing with right now.
I mean, you don't want that thing to get infected.
No.
He's never going to get antibiotics from the High Evolutionary.
So the group that we see here, right, we're introduced to Rocket, Lila, Teeps, Floor. Floor was not in any of the comics, to my knowledge, the comics of the Guardians. Rocket and Lila and Teefs were in the comics in some ways, but not in the way we think of here. Gunn, and he told us before in pre-production, I believe too, and development for the movie, that he was going to use Lila, but that and Rocket's story was going to be way different than what the comics had thought about. Half-World and what we're introduced to as Counter-Earth later, that was pretty word for word where Rocket came from. Like that was all adapted pretty directly from there. But Lila, this is like how cartoony, again, the comics were, was considered Rocket's love interest. That was how it was at that time. And Rocket himself wasn't really, they were all experimented on, but Rocket was more of actually a guard of Half-World. not as gnarly again. Like, I know, Kit, you talked about how gnarly this movie could be with like the descriptions and how the animals looked and stuff. It wasn't really
gross.
Yes. Yes. Gross and gnarly for sure. I believe there was like a lot of political interests of the world. Like, they had different factions that were kind of keeping it secure to where it actually wasn't this gnarly. Like, they actually were creating some kind of society here, which I think is what the end of the movie, we'll talk about later, kind of sets up. And then the one character that wasn't used, and I think is probably good he wasn't, Rocket had a nemesis in the comics, a genetically modified bunny named Black Jack O'Hare.
Is that a reference to the old Star Wars character, Jaxxon?
I have no
which
idea.
Which is a space bunny?
That's actually really funny.
Not that to be might confused be the with Jax Off.
Yeah, right. You don't want to get. He really hates it when you confuse him with Jax Off.
No, I don't think that was the point of that character in the comics. But you never know. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But then you also had the Teefs. He was a walrus that was actually considered to be Lila's. It's got to be like adoptive father. And they cleverly termed him his name
because he's a walrus.
Walrus. They called him Walrus. That was his name. But
man, I wish I was a comic book writer back in the day where I could just have, there's no bad ideas. You just show up and you're like, what if we call a walrus Walrus?
Well, there's bad ideas, but you can just stop talking about them in the next issue. You know,
it's true. Yeah. Well, how do the nerds like this?
It's like serialized television.
I think that's about all I've got for us, but yeah, that's the context for you.
Awesome. So yeah, we're learning here that he is in fact 89P13. They need to go on a mission to figure out how to turn off the kill switch so they can heal Rocket. You know, and this, the emotional core of this plot is deep because Peter's can't lose another friend, you know, and he yeah. blames himself, even though he wouldn't have been able to stop Adam Warlock had he been sober, but we can pretend he could. In fact, he's the least capable, arguably.
Yeah, honestly.
Even though he is half God. There's this hilarious bit, you know, Drax is always on full display to humor up any serious scenes, and we're going to kill them all when we get there, you know, and he's like, we're not going to kill anybody. We're going to kill one guy.
One dumb, stupid guy.
One guy that no one loves. And now you're just being sad. Yeah. I love the banter. I really do. Yeah. We cut to Arate Labs on Counter Earth. We meet the High Evolutionary. We talked about him earlier. He's a real dick who is working very hard at eugenics and other horrible things.
Yeah. He wants to make the perfect utopia, basically.
The Orgascope is where things get gross.
It's not a big fan of the Orgascope.
Yeah.
It's gross. It's bioformed. It's just like a veiny cock. And then all the,
it really is though.
And all of the guards are just ball sacks. And like, I just hate every bit of it.
That is the perfect description for it. And the funniest thing, is when I look at other pre-production notes, Gunn, I think more so than the first and second movie, made so much of this practical effects, which is really impressive. But for what we're discussing here, it's very gross. And you have to wonder, like, Gunn knew what he was doing when he was doing all this. He had to have. This is just so out of pocket.
Yeah, it's bioformed. And we get a little bit of like foreshadowing. You know, they mentioned Peter's grandpa and how he could still be alive. And I like people. People die when they're like 50. Are you about to die?
I'm not 50. I love Mantis.
It's
so
good shit. And then I love the whole Zargnuts bit where he doesn't want to give any to Mantis for no reason.
Well, did you watch the Guardians Holiday Special?
I did, for the
first time, actually.
Oh, really?
It's really funny. If you haven't watched it,
it's
definitely
kind of
watch it.
The first time we really see the world they live in that we see in Volume 3 is from the Nowhere Holiday Special, right?
But this joke is carried over from that where Mantis ate all of Drax's Zargnuts without asking, and so he's being petty.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. And it makes it worse. Nope. And it makes it worse because I didn't realize until I rewatched that scene that he says they're all gone, and then he just continues to eat them in front of her. Yeah.
And she's like, "You son of a bitch." The Sly Stallone Ravagers board the ship, and with them is Gamora, who has been contacted by Nebula to help them out, obviously to Peter's shock and dismay.
I love how she's like, I didn't want you to freak out. And he's, why do you think I would be freaking out? He gets that voice.
Why'd you get so high pitched? We get more memories of Rocket and the High Evolutionary back in time. This is the bit where he like evolves the turtle. Mm-hmm. And I love how, again, this is the kind of, this is nitpicking. Like most of this movie works. It's so fun and entertaining, but it's little stuff. Like if you start to pick it apart, young Rocket, before he's even named Rocket, doesn't know what the sky is, but he does know what hyptonic filters are. Do you know what I mean? Like he's like sky. Ah, cool.
Well, you know,
the problem with the genomes is, and I'm like, Jesus,
he's never seen a sky because he's been a prisoner his whole life. But maybe he's been around all this technology.
That's not how knowledge works. There are foundational concepts that you need to be able to understand things like amoebas and physics, you know.
Yeah,
you can't know what a hyptonic filter is without knowing what a sky is.
I have a tiny thought on that. I kind of look at it because I've also shamelessly written stories about these characters. Definitely not fan fiction. And so
Rule 34 stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Wait, what? My friends are like, Sean, no.
It's that turtle guy, right?
Me and Teefs.
Oh, absolutely.
Me
and Teefs. Anyway. but no. But when I write about these characters, I've thought I have tackled that question. I've thought, wait, how can these characters seem so juvenile yet so like smart? I think it's possible, right, for you to get raised in a place and have an incredible understanding of math, science, whatever, all these things, but yet you're not exposed to the concept of what a world outside a spaceship is in a way. Like it sounds wild for us to conceive of, I think, sitting here in the world that we live in today. But I think, you know, if you get sheltered enough or manipulated, quite frankly, as he has been throughout this, that's a part of what really gets me, honestly, in these flashbacks is how much he seems to endear the High Evolutionary initially, but then how slowly, like, he just looks so like he just wants love. He just wants people to like value him and the work he does. But anyway, I say all that to say that I think it's just the level of manipulation and selectiveness of the High Evolutionary, you know, for how great of a villain he is. He's able to like only select certain pieces of knowledge that he wants him to learn and build off of because of how smart he is. But he doesn't want him to get the idea of freedom. And I would argue even later when we see the idea of like the sky, right, when they have that conversation, that is where Rocket, when he finds a way to name himself, that's one of his flaws, I think, the High Evolutionary. When that moment happens, he doesn't realize that Rocket already has the first concept of freedom, of the sky, of this idea of going up into the air and going away. Anyway, I went off track a little bit, but that's the gist of it.
Now, very well said. Like I said, it was just it's a tiny thing that I noticed since I'm taking notes, I just thought it was funny. But it's interesting too that, you know, this isn't stuff that the High Evolutionary gave him. Cause remember, he's actually quite shocked that Rocket has the ability, to see what's wrong with what's going on when none of his scientists or he himself can figure it out. So mm-hmm. not only does the fact that Rocket, having that ability to navigate his own world at all amazing to him, but he's actually smarter than all of them, you know? So that's actually quite upsetting to the High Evolutionary, but flashback that we get. Yeah. There's a needle drop on, and I started counting the needle drops. There are 10 if you count the post credits, I think. But there's a needle drop on when they're dropping on the skin planet.
I'll always pop for an In the Meantime by Space Hog. You throw that in a movie, I'm there. especially if the people are dressed up like Pac-Man and the Pac-Man ghost. Mm-hmm. Like I'm all here for it.
Most of them work. I just think they're a little more. Maybe it's just not even his fault. They're the same. But now that we know it's the thing that it's mm-hmm. like these movies are all set up like mixtapes, maybe it's just a little more exhausting.
You're just used to the gimmick now. So you're looking for it.
That could be all it is. But when they're landing on the skin planet and Quill is talking to Gamora, he's distracted by the fact that, and imagine how that must feel.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah.
You've been with somebody for years and years and years. You love them. And now they're there still. You watch them die, but they're back, but they don't know who you are. And
I mean, this is legitimately a completely different person. They just look like the person that you dated.
Oh,
and I can't imagine how much of a mind fuck that would be where, according to that person, you literally never dated them. But when you see them, you see the person that you were in love with and had a relationship and had a past with. Like, that's got to be such a mind fuck. Because this movie, you can get a little like, okay, Peter Quill, you're being a little too much. Pull back on the gas. But because of that situation, it's a little, you sympathize with them, I think, a little bit more.
And that's why the jokes work, I think. They play it.
Yeah.
They play it well. I love the bit where he's just going on and on and on. And they're like, you're on an open line. We can all hear you. Why didn't you tell me? We was hoping it would stop. And then Drax, like, it's so pathetic.
Gamora and Peter's banter all throughout this movie, I love it so much. It's so funny, but it's so nuanced. And you understand, like you said, where Peter's coming from. Even though you might want to say, like, hey, hold back, man. Like, we get it. Because especially, and again, kind of why I hate the MCU, but also if you did watch Infinity War and you did see what happened there and Endgame, you understand where he's coming from, like how rough that was, because we saw her die too, if we saw those movies, you know? Yeah. So there's that added pain of like the viewers get it too, I think.
Absolutely. They bust inside the skin. I don't like that. And Nathan Fillion.
Plus, it makes me feel good.
Yeah. Nathan Fillion plays Master Carja, like head of security.
God, I love him so much.
And we get the whole Drax is like Rick from Anchorman, you know, because they're playing it off really well. And all of a sudden he's like, I'm angry too. Bro, I'm yelling.
I love how they keep this bit where Nathan Fillion's like, oh, you an underling you don't like? I got one of those too. Yeah, and he keeps just talking about the guy behind him the whole time.
He just fucking hates that guy.
You, I love you. You're doing a great job. Like, you're doing so great, but you. And he just keeps giving him like shitty looks the whole time. You have no idea what this guy's done to earn his ire.
Yeah. And then sneaking along the Orgascope, they bump into the evolutionary's buddy, who we later find out has the
Teal?
The kill switch in his brain. Yeah, Teal. And then the bit with Bleedle Snort, where Mantis makes him have a crush on Jax. Hey. Or Drax.
What's your name?
Mine's Bleedle Snort.
It's so funny when he goes like, what's your name? He's like, Drax the Destroyer.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
I also love Drax's reaction beforehand when Mantis does that. He's like, oh God. And I can just,
yeah,
I,
like she does this all the time.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this shit again. Great.
This is exhausting. A huge fan of Daniela Melchior, by the way, who plays Uhura in this. Isn't that the name of somebody in Star Trek, by the way? That
Ula, I think. No, Ula is in Star Wars, sorry.
It's Uhura is Uhura who I'm thinking, is
who thinking of. Yeah.
Is that Zoe Saldana?
Zoe Saldana.
Ironically?
Yeah, in the J.J. Abrams track, yeah.
But yeah, Daniela Melchior, if you don't know, played Ratcatcher 2 in The Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah, that is her.
And yeah, that's who that is. James Gunn. Buddy, sorry, I was laughing at the bit where he's like, sounds like her, and it's Nebula.
Oh yeah, I love Karen Gillan. No, Karen Gillan as Nebula is one of the standout MCU characters for me.
Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
Like, because she,
I think her character has gone through
so much,
growth. So many changes, and so much growth. But even how they're presenting her, like, I wouldn't say they sexualized her ever in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, and it's been a long time since I've seen those. But I think they're just letting her be a person in this movie specifically,
yeah,
much more so than they've ever allowed her before.
Yeah. And this is really the first movie, I think, where we get to see her and Peter kind of have this sort of leadership style together. Mm-hmm. Cause she led the Guardians along with Rocket during the snap.
Throughout all of his drunkenness.
She's been caring for Peter, and just this sort of like relationship they have now is so nice. Like when he kind of looks at her longingly and she's like, don't even start. Like that whole bit is very fun. I never knew how black your eyes were.
I love that.
He picked honestly, a pretty set.
Oh my God. He picked a pretty set.
Things not like, to say.
Those came from Thanos.
He ripped my real eyes
to
out.
To torture me.
And replaced them with these ones.
He picked a pretty set. But the whole point is about his character arc, about how like you don't need, and I love that about this movie, that, you know, it's not that you get Gamora back or you get someone else. It's because a lesser movie would do that. Like Nebula was here the whole time and you were ignoring her, you know,
or he gets back with new Gamora.
Yes. Yeah. It's just that you don't need anyone to be okay. You know, you've always had somebody there, but I love that bit. But then I love God help me. The Carrot Man bit works for me.
I'll kill the carrot. The guy who looks like a carrot. And it's just that hideous looking dude looking around like,
oh. But then he's like so relieved when they leave.
Yeah.
That's the bit that gets me. But yeah, they've got to hack into the bio system. Whatever. We cut back to the past. I think, again, the animals are all hanging out together, all delusional. Mm-hmm. This is when they name themselves Lila, Tief, Floor, Tief's Floor, and Rocket. This stuff worked less for me this time. I've got to, like, it was so sad when I saw it in theaters and watching it. It could just be the onslaught of all the stuff I watched this week, but I was kind of giggling at like the rabbit, especially. Is that a rabbit?
Floor? Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Floor. Okay. Like, Floor is like
a monstrosity.
Like, we all hear. Yeah. Like, we all hate Floor, right? Like,
Floor creeps me the fuck out. Like, I think it would work better. It would work in the movie's favor better if they didn't make Floor just a monster of like nightmare fuel.
And like, chill out a little bit. Yeah.
Lila looks great. Mm-hmm. Teefs, I can get behind Teefs. But then you see Floor and it's like, get that the fuck away from me.
even Teefs looks like a contestant on like Twisted Metal, you know, like,
oh my God,
he's Sweet Tooth's little buddy.
No, like Ajax kind of vibes, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, they all watch through the files that they find on the Orgoscope, Rocket's tortured past. And they're like, holy fuck. Right. You know, recorder B2H6. We won't think about it when we do it. So they're, you know, and it's interesting because we've never gotten Rocket's backstory up to this. All he's ever said is, I'm not a raccoon, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
One thing that gets me with that too, and it throws back to a line that I let go, I was going to mention it later, was when it's against the small things, even the small dialogue choices that like Gunn and like people who wrote this movie chose, like when Peter had just said in passing, when Rocket first got shot, he never talks about his like himself or like his story or whatever. And that's just so gut-wrenching. It's kind of giving like when you have a really close friendship with someone, but like you still can never get there with talking about like this tough thing that happened to you. You know, it's not, it never invalidates your friendship. It's just you can't get there because it's so painful, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so that definitely, I get that energy a lot throughout this movie. And I think it's just done well. These little, you know, throwbacks to that, to like, wow, why'd he never talk about this? And in a way, when I first saw this, I thought, why wouldn't he not talk about this? Like, it's so rough, you know?
But they end up getting what they need ish and busting out of the skin planet, which is not a sentence I typically enjoy. But this time I did.
They did some fun stuff and James Gunn is really good at like ratcheting up the, even though none of the main characters die in this movie, you really feel like it could happen. Like there's a point when Drax gets shot with that big gun in the back.
He gets shot like three times.
Yeah. And Mantis is carrying him. It looks pretty dire, but I love how Peter's trying to work his charm on what's your name? Ura.
Yeah.
And he's like, please, those are good people out there like you. I know I can reach their heart.
Yeah, when he swindles her.
Yeah. And she's like, okay, tell your truth. And he's like, nah, sorry. I just want to get in your systems and mess up everybody.
You thought I was that stupid. And that's the first time Gamora kind of respects him.
Yeah.
And he teases you like, oh, you're going to get them back together. You know, it's a bunch of playing with the audience, which I really appreciate, our own expectations. But Gamora wants to go back to the Ravagers, but they don't have the time. So she sneakily sends a link to her Ravager friend who's actually with the Sovereigns. And there's the whole bit where Elizabeth Debicki plays Adam Warlock's mother and he's dumb as shit. You know, so show him we mean business and he fucking melts him and she's like, what the hell? I'm sorry.
I think we sent a pretty clear message.
And he's got that pet. He loves that pet from now on.
I don't enjoy how it's making me feel. Because he feels bad that he killed it.
Yeah.
I think canonically the name via the Wikipedia page is Blurp that he gives it.
Blurp.
Yeah. It's so funny to me though.
It looks like a blurp. That's a good name.
Yeah. You look like a blurp.
Thanks.
This episode of Streaming Things is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day?
Sleep.
You would sleep more.
More, yeah.
Okay, sleep that's more. Fair. Some people might go for a run, read an extra book. A lot of us spend our whole lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. That's what therapy can do. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. You can learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. You can get empowered empowered to be the best version of yourself.
You can also nap.
You can also just nap. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, if you've never tried it, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stream.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at UH1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks.
April is here, the tomb is empty, and it's time to give a special thanks to all of our patrons who keep the lights on at Streaming Things. And I want to give a special shout out to our super patrons for the month of April. Thank you so much to Stanton Valentino, Mattelstat, Bryce Coppin, Susie Callahan, Anthony Corona, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Ashley Hazen, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento7, Jay Scramo, Bluff Pum, AK Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Conrad, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Peaches, Emmy, Haley B, Joe Velez, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
And we get needle drop number 5, and Drax's life
get
is a
some
pond.
Flaming lips, man.
Oh yeah.
Come on. Do you realize?
And then we get flashback to more unhinged evolutionary. He's angry that Rocket knew about the microsamina proteins, and he decides to incinerate the entirety of the rest of 89, which is Rocket's buddies.
No.
The Guardians arrive to counter Earth. Needle drop number 6 ensues.
Faith No More.
It's a good one.
We care a lot.
We care a lot. Yep. My note was, it's a good one. I fucking love that
one.
You
a Faith No More guy?
Yeah. And then Drax throwing the ball at the little girl is another one that gets me every time. Yeah. They're trying to be nice. You know, and she looks so cute walking up.
This planet of Counter-Earth is so Guardians or like James Gunn, because it looks just like Earth if Earth was populated by a zoo.
Yeah, it's so like all it's like watching live action Bluey or some shit.
Yes, seriously. Mom. And so like just seeing like a rabbit man who's dressed up as a lawyer, or like a creepy little goat child.
The little bat family freaks me out.
Yeah, I mean they're all horrifying. Like except for the big paunchy teddy bear or panda bear man.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, when he just like brains that kid.
Yeah,
just so good. And again, just to emphasize again, just really cool. Overwhelming practical effects and like costumes and sets that like James Gunn is using throughout all of this. Is it very creepy and a little bit much at times? I don't know. I love that. And even the first Guardians movie, I think, was pretty heavy on practical stuff at times too. And so I think like that's again what sets it apart, I think, from other MCU movies. We always love Endgame and Infinity War, but the valid criticisms are, what are these actors acting against? A green screen the whole time, almost, in some areas. I think it's cool they do have physical stuff they can keep interacting with. And we see that, I think, in these scenes.
Yeah, this movie actually apparently set the record at the time of its release for having the most makeup appliances used in a single film. There's like 23,000 prosthetics used across 1,000 actors in this movie.
And that's giving people jobs, yes. Baby.
Yes. That's that James Gunn economy.
Mm. Not just Sean Gunn, who got multiple jobs from this. Drax keeps trying to lay down on the couch. I love that whole bit. And the whole bit where finally Peter stops and's like, I can see you, Drax, because he's doing it a third time.
This is such a great little microcosm of the relationships between these two, because Drax is just, you know, because they're trying to set up by the end of the movie, like all these characters have a, like, they kind of understand what each and everyone's role is, what they bring to the table. They kind of take each other for granted. And this scene kind of hypes that up, because Drax is like not really paying attention. He's not listening to anybody's directions. Nebula is overly critical of Mantis, and Mantis doesn't like that. It's very funny. It's a very good scene.
Mm-hmm. And then the whole bit with Quill's drawing.
That's very good.
I'd like, and you hear Drax in the background. I'd like to have that when we're done with all this. it's such a good touch.
Yeah.
My headcanon is that the goat lady or whoever it was they were talking to knew exactly what they were saying the whole time, but was just letting them be idiots the whole time.
They're bats.
Or the bats, yeah, bat family.
By the way, yeah. It's really rude to call them goat ladies.
Is this Batman?
It is. The husband is Batman.
We should have known that James Gunn was going to make a Batman movie this whole time.
He's plugging the DC earlier. But it's funny, in retrospect, Drax speaks their language, and it's way more infuriating. He's just trying to lay on the couch throughout all this.
Yeah.
But he's just
that's what it's there for.
He's just being a good jube. No, it's for people to sit up straight and sit shoulder to shoulder. Things could have multiple uses.
I mean, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong. Couches are for also laying, but it is rude. I sleep
on my couch all the time.
Yeah, but you wouldn't go to a stranger's house and just lay down on the couch with your shoes on, you know?
Constantly.
Take your pants off.
That's why people don't invite me places.
It's how you assert your dominance.
Right.
That's right. You can only use, it's an urban legend. I think there's one or two, but people say you can only use one F-bomb in a PG-13 movie.
Mm-hmm. This is the best example of an F-bomb being used in definitely a Marvel movie for sure.
Excellent utilization of it.
Nebula, open the fucking door.
She doesn't know how a car door works. He does, because he's from Earth. Open the fucking door.
it kills me every time.
And then he doesn't even know how to drive.
Right.
I was 8 when I left.
Yeah. So realistic. That was so great.
We cut to Gamora drinking brewskis on the ship, hanging out with Rocket. We get needle drop number 6.
Alice Cooper, mate, my guy.
He's working on building a new society still. When we cut back to the High Evolutionary, he plans on destroying Counter-Earth. He's still not done. It's never going to be perfect to him. That's the most insidious part about this villain. And we learn later that he's made many of these. So he's created and destroyed billions of people.
Yeah. He created the Sovereign. Those are people that he created.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The guards outside says that the one-armed gun girl can't come. So Nebula's not allowed to come because her body is a weapon. And in the car, we should have pointed out that Quill gave Groot his guns and said, you know what to do. And at the time, you're thinking, what is that?
He shoved him up his butt.
He doesn't use guns.
Turns into John Wick later on. Yeah.
He keistered the pistols. He did.
Every crew needs a guy willing to keister pistols for everyone.
That's why I go on every heist.
You're the keister guy?
I just hold all the tools.
He has like 8 pistols in his coat like Groot did.
No. If that's what you call my butthole, my coat.
You just get a gun, put it in a Ziploc bag and hand it to Kit. He knows what to do.
Yeah, that's right. And I just go home. Past Rocket tells the crew, his crew, that the Evolutionary sits on a throne of lies. We got to bust out of here, right? And then the High Evolutionary shoots the gopher. It's terrible. Or whatever that thing is.
Otter. Canonically.
Is it a beaver?
Is it an otter?
Canonically, it's supposed to be an otter. That's what Lila is. But
he shoots Rocket's beaver.
But then Rocket, in anger, ravages his face. Shoots the guards. But when the guards are firing back at him, they take, I'm sorry, it's not funny. They kill
they're dead, yay.
They kill Tiefs. I think Floor specifically is so fucking weird.
No, that
when you just see her shot in the chest, you're like.
Well, the whole time she's like, Rocket, go now. Rocket, Tief and Floor, go now. Yeah. And she just keeps repeating that. So when she's not repeating it, it's kind of like,
Yeah.
Jumping on the floor.
Those guys, get out of their cages.
Those guys couldn't shoot fucking Rocket Raccoon, but they hit everyone else in that room.
That's true. They totally stormtroopered the shit out of the Tiefs and Floor.
Yeah, they did.
And then he makes a break for it. Now we get, it's sad. I'm not laughing at it. Only on the second time was I not crying the whole time, right? But on the second time,
it's really sad and upsetting.
I was like, eh.
I get it.
Floor being a little weird, you know? Yeah. And how'd they get out of the cages? Because they're in their locks still.
He made the key card.
Did they pick it up or something? Because he only let himself out. And then he ran into the evolutionary immediately.
Well, he opened Lyra and Tief's door.
You can't just keep making people's names up. It's Lyla.
Lyla, sorry. I don't know why I keep wanting to say, who's Lyra?
That's cooler.
Lyra.
Lyla. Yeah, he opens Lyla's door. That's why they hug for the first time before she gets shot.
Right. And but how did Tief's and Floor get out?
Because Floor is in Rocket's cage and Tief's is in Lyla's cage.
Really?
They're cellmates, yeah.
Well, they could have got out and helped a lot sooner.
Right?
That
almost, I mean, I'm not going to point fingers here, victim
like,
blame.
But Tief's is pulling, I mean, just like his visual look, he's pulling a Wilford Brimley where he's like, I would like to stay inside. I don't want to go out there. I'd like to stay inside on this one.
Yeah. It was good kind Tief's. Of funny, I will say, how Tief's kind of just sat there and was like, Rocket, we got to go now. And he just sits there. He doesn't do anything. Doesn't make any attempt to leave.
You have to get in here and wheel me out.
Push me. Push me now.
But I will say about that scene, the one thing that always guts me, because I did see this in theaters. So my two friends were just bawling when Bradley Cooper like lets out that crazy good scream. Like scream. It's so rough and so hard to listen to, but he kills it there. He puts his all into that. And I had misremembered when I rewatched this. I thought he had another reaction when he saw that Tief's and Floor were dead, but. Like I said, Sean Gunn just did what Sean Gunn did and made me wrecked looking at his reaction. And then the little like look he does, like you see him slowly change his face, the last shot of him in the ship, when it just goes to like that rocket skull, like I'm done, like no more friends. I'm not taking any more chances, you know?
Except for Groot.
Yeah, that's.
But he's almost invincible, so it's safe. I really want to rewatch the first one because that used to. That one's funny.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
That one is funny.
He's in prison trying to convince the guy to take his leg and stuff. And
I want to get that leg.
Like that shit's funny.
I want that leg.
But Drax stealing the guy's motorcycle is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Because he just gets bored and clotheslines an innocent bystander off his motorcycle for no reason.
No reason.
And the fact that it's Dave Bautista is funnier to me. You know, it's just like...
Yeah, I want this.
But yeah, he takes the motorcycle. He tricks Mantis.
The way he tricks Mantis. Yeah. He's like,
we'll drive back over there.
She's like, we can't leave the ship. He's like, oh, well, how about then we just drive over to the ship? And she's like, 20 feet away? Yeah, hop on.
Even though, again, this is me overthinking it, she could make him turn around. So she's almost culpable because she decides not to. Obviously, she kind of wants to leave too, right?
There is this beautiful brotherly, sisterly relationship between the two where she's like his biggest supporter and he's hers.
Yeah.
But they're also like always picking on each other. It's adorable. Like, I feel like she would, in this situation, she's like, I want to go. I'm not going to make him do it.
I love that when Quill confronts the High Evolutionary, he starts to villain monologue and Quill's like, I don't give a fuck.
I don't give a shit, man.
I've heard this shit so many times. Why do I need to hear it again?
Yeah, it's a nice subversion of our expectations. We cut back briefly to Gamora, who's taking a shit.
That was great, actually. She was just humming and stuff, having a good time.
And then he's going to destroy all of Counter-Earth and start over again, as he has done many times before.
Because this isn't the perfect society, as evidenced by the octopus drug dealer selling drugs to the cockroach people.
Yeah, was that the guy getting beat in the alley, or is that something else?
It was. I think it happened right before the guy got beat in the alley.
Just a normal society.
But you see how this there's like a seedy underbelly. Like this planet is very similar to our Earth, where there is like crime and stuff like that happening.
Fuck yeah,
but this probably is a holdover from what the High Evolutionary said he loved about Earth, which was the art and culture, and he tried to instill that into these people. And I guess a byproduct of that is also our demons. You know, our darker side.
Yeah, they have to be creative. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not just jubes.
No.
Sometimes we're enemies.
We're booge.
Yes. It's backward. Then Gamora fights War Pig, which I think is a Black Sabbath joke.
Probably. She's voiced by Judy Greer.
Huh?
Which I think is really Judy Greer's voice coming out of that.
Yeah.
It was a mind fuck.
It was shocking. Adam Warlock shows up, and this is where Adam's mommy dies. Blows up.
Mommy?
Mommy, you know his reaction to when he calls her mommy. I'm like, oh.
Oh, it's terrifying. Yeah. And then Drax and Mantis are right behind Nebula when she's like, bring the ship, because the whole planet's about to explode. And he's like, I can't do that. I'm not there. Where are you? And she's standing right behind her. And it's important for his arc, but I also find it really funny that it is just a straight up mistake. A lot of movies would have it be where, like, it's unfortunately he made that decision, but it's actually worked out better but I think in this case, it would have just been better if he was at the ship and could have brought it, you know?
Possibly. Through his mistake, they were able to save all the people from
all the jujubes,
all the animals, everybody.
Yeah. Even the obelisks. Not ableists. I want to be really clear about that.
They saved a bunch of people who are like, ooh, I'm blind.
I love Robin Hood Men in Tights.
That's my favorite movie.
Blinken's the best. Then we get the Groot grenade, and he's loaded with weapons in his bark. And
they go back to back. It's pretty dope.
Yeah, they do the whole like Lethal Weapon thing, and then they end up jumping off the ship with the dude, and Groot can grow wings, which only slows down the fall. And they just like grind the dude's body to dust to land with him. Luckily, they didn't destroy that hard drive doing that.
Right.
Yeah.
Drax and the crew are breaking in to save Groot and Quill, who are gone. Like they fall right past them.
Unbeknownst to them, they've gotten themselves off the ship.
And Gamora is trying to learn how to fly, which is weird that she doesn't know how to do that. Yeah. And then they land on that dude. Nebula blows up on Mantis and Drax. And this is when we have that like Dark Knight of the Soul confrontation between those three. Drax just, it shouldn't work as well as it does to me every time, but Mantis is like, nobody should care that he's fucking useless and dumb as shit. And I'm not sure I appreciate this defense.
It's not his fault. He's stupid.
Yeah.
He's the only one of us who doesn't hate himself. Ooh, I don't care if he's stupid.
That was a really good line.
You think I'm stupid?
Forget.
Mantis is great because she doesn't try to be like too deep with her stuff, but she somehow that because of that reason, though, when she does say deep stuff, it really hits like that one. I was like, wow.
He's the only one of us who doesn't hate himself. And then as soon as she says forget, because he's so upset, he goes, ha, 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 you're so lucky I'm so strong. And there's like the little jujube people who is like the next evolution for the high evolutionary. They can survive a whole day on only 30 calories. You know, they can run for 500 miles without raising their breaking a sweat.
They can solve a Rubik's cube in a second.
But they have no, inspiration kind of thing. They're not going to make art. They're not going to do cool stuff like Rocket does. They need his brain. We cut to Quill killing the kill switch. That's hard to say. Quill killing the kill switch on Rocket.
Yeah, they got the kill switch information from Teal's little brain. That's why he knocked him out of the window.
Yeah, the code.
Yeah, and then we cut to while they're trying to like save Rocket at the last second, like they're losing his vitals. We get to see Rocket show up at that Harry Potter train station at the end of
my note is
it really is Rocket's, though.
Yeah,
Rocket sees the gopher in purgatory. Was my note.
The gopher in purgatory. I do. And then there's that one cutaway where they're like, Teef's and Flora here too. And you see Teef's doing this like little walrus wave that cracks me up.
It's great.
He's going to teef him how to Dougie.
Teef me how to Dougie.
Teef me how to Dougie. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But
there's like, Flora's here too. And he's like, can she not?
Yeah.
I'm good.
I don't want to talk to Flora. Yeah, but Quill won't let go, and they bring Rocket back. And that's a really powerful scene. I think that Chris Pratt does a great job in that scene.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of movies that have done the, I'm not going to lose you. And it goes both ways in each movie. You know, you've seen it both either way 1,000 times where they really are dead or they really do come back. But this was done well.
I remember when the first trailer for this movie came out, they have the shot of him going, no, like at the table. Mm-hmm. And I remember even watching that in the trailer, like for whatever reason, I started like welling up tears just because of the...
Because you're a bitch.
Oh my God. Fuck, you're a fucking baby. Why are you just stop crying?
Oh, you want a rattler, you little baby? I'm just a baby.
I can pay you with blocks.
But Chris Pratt's a problematic dude, but like, he crushed it in this scene.
Just loves Jesus.
And ruining architecture.
this scene really got me. And again, surprisingly, I didn't cry during this movie until like near the very, very end. One thing I'd forgotten to say at the beginning is that I was fully prepared for, because of, you know, all the marketing that was so heavy on like, oh, someone's going to die. Someone, Rocket, 99% chance he's going to die, you know? And so I was prepared to see my favorite fictional character ever in any fictional media, like just die. I was getting prepared for that emotionally. So I was like, oh my God, he's going to do it. Like he's going to walk forward. That's going to be it. But I love the way they handled the afterlife in this particular movie. One of my criticisms, and it's getting stronger now that we're getting into the era of people in the MCU being like, oh guys, what if we brought back Iron Man? Or what if we brought back like, I don't know, some other version of a different character.
Multiverse, baby.
Or like Valhalla or something like that. Like, I don't mind that stuff, but I don't like when there's all these cheat ways to like get out of death necessarily. And this movie, not just with Gamora, like the past version of her, but like with Rocket, how they handle it and his friends, showing that there is ambiguity with like the afterlife. And you know, the funny moment that I did laugh at when Lila says my favorite raccoon, he's like, I'm not a raccoon. So I don't know. I love that scene. And it was so cathartic to see that he didn't die in that moment. Jumping a little bit ahead, but there's two Nebula interactions between her and Rocket, or kind of like to that I love so much. And it infuriates me that, in between, like when we, you know, start Endgame, that we didn't get to see like a really solid interaction between the two of them, because they've been together for 5 years, just the two of them.
Yeah.
But I do love in this third movie, I think Gunn is giving us something here where one of the first things Rocket says when he wakes up is, where's Nebula? Is she okay? Like, I love that. It was so wholesome. And I think the way it's acted too, you can read it to it what you will, but I kind of read it as like that little pause where he goes, yeah, she's up on the screen right there. Like, yeah, I kind of read that as like, he cares a damn lot about her, but he doesn't want it. He still is trying to like save it with like, no, yeah, she's up on the screen there. That's why I said it. Yeah. I'm not just asking because I care about her a lot, you know?
And vice versa earlier in the movie, when Gamora is kind of like, we don't have to save that raccoon. And Nebula was the one that really stood up to Gamora and was like, no, that little raccoon did so much for us. And for me specifically, we're saving him. And it is nice to remember that the two of them probably have the longest time together out of the whole team, because they were separated with just themselves for 5 years.
And also when she, which we'll see in the next scene here, when like Mantis, or I forget who it is, says that Rocket's alive, Nebula like cries, like she cannot believe it. So like the relief for her, because Mantis or Drax could have, but no, Nebula cried. And that was pretty.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big thing to see Nebula.
She's come a long way.
Yeah.
After all the torture that Thanos put her through with her eyes.
Yeah.
But he picked a pretty set.
He did.
He noticed that your eyes were black. But then right as they're like reveling in the fact that Rocket has survived the high evolutionary poops on the party. And we get that you stretch face RoboCop looking Skeletor wannabe purple nurple. Which he did, the RoboCop bit is what got me.
Yeah, because his face prosthetic RoboCop looks fan. Like yeah. Murphy when he has the helmet off.
Well, that's the whole thing about me, why I wear hats, because I feel like because I'm pale and my hairline's, it's not like a crown balding thing, it's just like a high hairline thing.
Yeah.
Even though I shave it, it grows back so quickly. Anyway, long story short, I feel like I look like RoboCop with his mask off, which as a kid horrified me. I was like, put that back on. I don't like the way that looks at all. You're nowhere near as cool with your visor up. But anyway, that's my own personal demons.
Thank you for sharing it.
Unlike Drax, I do hate myself, is what I'm getting at. But yeah, so then Cosmo, back on Nowhere, is still mad about being Bad Dog. And by the way, is that fucking Howard the Duck sitting there?
Yeah.
Okay, just wondering. Kraglin gets a call that he is needed. And we cut back briefly to why, and this is where it's, you know, fully hit home why the High Evolutionary wants Rocket so badly, even though the Jupes are incredible beings. It's all rote memorization. Only one has ever known true invention, 89P13. That's why they want Rocket's brain.
They need that brain.
We cut to Drax going to the kids, and he goes, "Hello, dumb idiots." And the reason that's so funny to me is that's how my dad was when I was a kid. And so that's how I am to my children. And even though it sounds abusive, I promise they're usually very receptive to it, you know?
Yeah. Hello, dumb idiots.
Like my son will be playing baseball or something, you know, or at the batting cage, and I'll walk by and be like, "It's fucking terrible." And he'll laugh, and then we'll sit and play together and stuff, you know. But anyway, Drax's reaction or his method of interaction is always cracked me up, because that's how I like to be.
My daughter always loved it when I made monkey noises. Yeah. Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep, beep, beep. I love Nabil being like, "Those aren't monkey noises," or something like that, just something to that effect. It's great.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, he speaks Orbeez, which the Jujube kids can speak. And Nebula's like, "You could do it this whole time? Why didn't you tell us?" Because he didn't ask.
And that's true. They thought he was too dumb to even think about maybe he could do that.
Yeah.
You never asked.
He's got skills.
Quill and Gamora are on their way to help. And she gives him his picture of his old pop-pop, because I guess he dropped it or something. And we get needle drop number 7. And there's the whole bit about get away from the starboard wall, and they breach it. Release the Hellspawn and the Kraken, and open the pit. Fuck those guys. And the Obelisks come out. Quill does that slick move on Adam with the self-destruct. And again, Gamora's impressed, and they're subverting your expectations for later. Like, ooh, they're going to get back together. Mantis makes friends with the monsters. I'll just call them that from now on. And
the Kraken monsters, yeah.
Yeah, Kraglin gets a Yondu Force Ghost. And Cosmo becomes a good dog with that whole part of their action sequence. Oh. Phenomenally done. And then I love the lines. One of the best villain lines I can think of in recent memory the last couple of years, where the High Evolutionary gets so angry. "There is no God. That's why I stepped in." I think that's great. You know, obviously we know that he's a megalomaniac, but it's really cool to have that driven home.
And him throwing that line out to his underlings really kind of sells where the underlings like, "Oh shit, yeah, this guy's off his rocker."
Yeah, they've been kind of like, they're still fascists, but they've been kind of like, "I thought we had a goal here that made sense. You're just a fucking nut job."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they turn on him, and then he goes Super Saiyan. Yeah. However he gave himself that power, and kills all of them. We get needle drop number 8, but I always, always support it if it's Beastie Boys.
"No sleep till
Brooklyn."
Da, da. Yeah,
it's good times.
The hallway scene.
Oh, so
the band's back together. They're in full effect. Even Gamora's there.
I love her reaction.
I don't know where she got that sword, but I love it. What reaction?
No,
of Gamora's.
I love Gamora's. She's the last one to turn around, and she rolls her eyes like, "Oh my god, you guys are idiots!" Like true fashion, volumes 1 Gamora. It was so funny to me.
Well, this is the big character turn for Rocket
as too. Well.
He's not going to run anymore. You know,
he's like, "I'm done running."
I love that line too.
And they're going to back him up.
James Gunn, I think, needs to be given an award for like the best at creating a sequence where your heroes are doing slow motion team walks towards the camera. He did it in the first Guardians. This is just as good. The team walking set to music scene from the Suicide Squad is one of my favorite ones of all time. Yep. With the Pixies drop. He just is so good at creating characters with recognizable silhouettes. Not only do they look cool walking set to that music, but like you said, Sean, he injects character moments into them as well. So it's not just needlessly, "Look how cool this looks." There also is something more than that happening with how the characters are performing as well.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And this fight scene is well choreographed. I love how the way that they all work together. It shows that they're a team.
And like especially like a one-er.
Yeah, like Rocket running along Groot's branches as they extend. Like they're all in perfect, you know, sync.
Yeah.
It's a team fight, goddammit.
But it's definitely like a really impressive scene, because they're just taking, to your point, Chris, it's very well choreographed, because they're taking several different shots but stitching them together to create the illusion of one long take.
Like a one-er, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really well done, because stuff like this can like fall apart very easily, but they do a stellar job with this sequence in particular. It's amazing.
Yeah, especially to that music. I mean, it's just a... This is a 10 out of 10 sequence in general. The rest of it kind of all happens quickly and as you would expect. They got to try to get everyone out. They want to rescue the Jujubes, all the animals.
Yeah, Kraglin's brought nowhere, and they kind of like connect the two ships together so they can create a bridge. They can evacuate everyone off of the High Evolutionary ship.
And they're the opposite of the High Evolutionary, because at one point they've only got so much room. They thought, oh, I thought we were only going to, you know, take the higher sentient creatures with us. Now we're getting fucking everybody. That's what he would do, right? He would kind of delineate between them, betwixt them, if you will, Steve.
Thank you.
And we got to create a permeable shield, all that shit, right? Rocket realizes he's a raccoon. He goes to his old cage and it says raccoon right there.
Yeah.
That's his arc.
Ooh.
Because I love the whole bit. It's funny to me, but you got to understand, Rocket is a genius, right? Yeah. And so when someone calls him a raccoon, he's like, not a fucking raccoon. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't feel that way.
Not a trash panda.
Yeah. But he is. He's a raccoon.
Before this, there's a scene that I want to talk about. It's when Nebula goes in before that, even the High Evolutionary is ordering them to, like, I forget what it is, to evacuate, I think something to that effect, or not, or no, they want to evacuate, I think, his like minions, and they tell him no, and it's a mutiny. They all turn their guns on him, and the High Evolutionary straight up kills them. And what I thought to myself was, the note I have here that I think is pretty poetic. I love that the High Evolutionary's own people can't justify protecting him. And the only thing at the end of the day that are going to try to save his ass, because he manipulated them to this extent, are his own experiments. That's the only thing that's defending him at the end of the day, because even like anyone of any sense of intelligent free will thought, right, is able to see that he's fucked up at the end of the day. And so I just thought it was poetic again that his own people who have intelligent, independent thought realize, no, I can't justify this anymore, you know?
Absolutely. That's why he had to go Super Saiyan. He's by himself now.
But I do like, in connection to that, when Rocket does go up to his cage, though, in the scene we're talking about now, I thought I was actually terrified, because that was the point where all of the footage ended for the trailer. I was like, oh my God, are they gonna do what happened with Lila? Like, he gets shot in the back here. That would gut me. Like, I was kind of terrified when he was going up to that cage. I'm like, oh God, this could go really badly here at any point. And there was multiple points even after the cage where I'm like, oh, this is where it might happen, right here. It very well could. And the team comes in and it's a sad scene and all of that. But it, as we'll see,
every time Rocket walked on frame, you're like, this is it. This is when they do him in. They're at like a Chuck E. Cheese. This is it. He's going to fall into that ball pit and never be seen nor heard from again.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting how like the High Evolutionary didn't really have like this climactic battle. He pretty much gets done in pretty quickly by Rocket. And then we get the face reveal that the stretched RoboCop skin was his mask. And that's what Rocket had done to him. So a lot of it was revenge as well, motivating him, not just the fact that he wanted Rocket's brain.
And it's pretty gnarly. Like,
crazy for a Marvel movie.
When Rocket escapes earlier in the movie and like cuts him up, you expect like, oh, he's got like he's scratched his face up a bit. Right.
Yeah. Like Shredder from the live action Ninja Turtle movies. Remember when like the, Splinter had scratched him.
Yeah. Yeah. You expect something like toned down like that, but no, he's legit. Like, he's got like an eye missing. His other eye is just all Harvey Dent style sticking out there in the open. His like cheek is all removed. So you see his teeth, and he looks like a corpse. And for a MCU PG-13 movie from Disney, it's like, holy fuck. Yeah. That's gnarly. This movie is gnarly.
Yeah. Gunn probably fought for that. I in theaters thought, that's a strange way to structure that sentence, that they were going to fucking kill Peter.
Yes.
Star-Lord. Yeah. Especially when he like burst in space like that. I honestly thought that was such a ball. I was for it.
Yeah, me too.
I'm like, let's do it. Ballsy way to go. That's, nobody picked Star-Lord to go. No. You know what I mean?
I saw some people picking Star-Lord.
Really?
Yeah.
Fuck those people. No. Yeah, I just thought that was great.
Yeah, they're getting the animals out.
Adam Warlock joins the team.
Yeah, because Groot saves Adam Warlock and tells him, like, everyone deserves a second chance. So Adam Warlock is, in the end, the one to go out and save Peter Quill from the cold recesses of space.
That's right, baby. And I appreciate that. Thank you, Adam.
did that look cool?
Mr. Warlock.
Such a good line.
I love that, like, Chris Pratt, because he was just in space, he's all frozen, but also kind of like his skin expanded. Mm-hmm. And he just looks like shit. He's like, did that look cool?
Yes, it did.
Everyone hugs him, and then Adam's awkward, like, I too want to be a part of this. Like, so good. He's so funny.
And Gamora goes back to her found family. This has ultimately always been a story about found family, and it's like a great arc for it to end this way, especially acknowledging that this is a different Gamora, and it's no less of a family. She's not with punk-ass Ravager criminals living a wrong life. She just found a different family.
A different type really of Guardians.
Equally important to her. We won't acknowledge that then, by that logic, one of her brothers was roasted by Adam.
No one liked him anyway. But that scene of when she's packing up to rejoin the Ravagers, and her and Pete have that final one last conversation where they're kind of not really looking at each other. They're back to back, and he's sort of like, he's over it into as much as he can be, like, of letting her go. And then she has that one last little bit where she, like, recognizes, like, hey, like, that probably sucked what you're going through. I bet we were fun, that version of us. And he's like, you wouldn't believe. And, like, it's very heartfelt. And I'm so happy that they didn't end up with them getting back together, because that Gamora is not the same Gamora. It's a completely different person. And it would have felt cheap if they made them. It would have felt cheap on the part of the original character and this new character if they got together like that. It'd be like, oh, come on. It'd be kind of gross.
Because they... It was a very specific set of circumstances that led her to loving him to begin with, right? Because she didn't at first. You can't recreate that magic.
Right. I really loved that it ended up being an independent choice at the end of the day. Even my friends, one of whom who has just seen Volume 1 as I was doing this rewatch for the first time, had said, like, oh, come on. They're not, like, when the fooled around and found love scene came on in Guardians 1, they're like, there's no way they're going to kiss. That's so ridiculous. And she was really happy, obviously, when it didn't happen. And I said, well, good for you, because they actually do handle their relationship really well through, like, the first two movies, the Avengers movies. If you really think about it, the only time they really explicitly got together, unfortunately, was Infinity War, like, which is so unfortunate for the timing. But it's handled really well throughout the series. And I'm glad that Gunn didn't drop the ball on that in this third movie either. Gamora, just, I've loved her as a female character in the sense she had so much independence and agency. And even seeing her, right, in that last scene, hugging the Ravagers and stuff, like, I got, like, fun chills from that. I'm like, oh, that's so awesome. I'm so happy for you, you know?
It's a great way to end that character.
Yeah, like, everybody gets a great send-off. You know, you get Mantis, who's looking to go seek independence and need some time away from Drax, you know? Everybody's on Nowhere together, this big band of misfits, and now they've got these giant monsters and stuff there to join them. Peter gets to go see his pop, go back to his roots of Earth, the place that he's been running from ever since his mother died, to kind of bury that pain.
Nebula's gonna run Nowhere, and Rocket's gonna run the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
The thing that made me cry, though, when I just bawled in the theater, oh my god, I couldn't hold any of it in, was when Peter turns and is like, well, we need a new captain, and it's you. I was like, what? Like, I was not expecting any of this. I was like, oh my God. Like, oh. And I think it was just 10 years of, like, this character that I love so dang much and seeing everything that he's gone through. And I'm like, you're actually going to make it a canon? I'm like, James Gunn, you fucking mad lad. Like, that was how I felt about it.
He's doing it.
Oh, and it just...
It's working!
It's working! Oh,
it got me in the end.
He's a freaking Guardian of the Galaxy. Yes. Now he runs the freaking Guardians of the Galaxy.
We get new Guardians, by the way. Kraglin, Adam Warlock, Cosmo, one of the Jube-Jubes, Rocket, and Groot, right?
A bigger group.
Yeah. Some post-credit scenes, right, you can just kind of sit with it, let it do its one tracking shot, and it's over, right? But... They didn't. They still put so much effort, I think, especially into, like, Rocket's last shots, really, where he's kind of sitting there and they're like, hey, you tell me when, boss. And he's like, I'm just going to sit in this for a minute. And I don't know, with that song in the background, too, like, oh, and he gets the last shot of the movie. And it's so you can tell he's just so satisfied with life and, like, everybody he has around him, his family, you know. And it was so wonderful just to see that at the very end.
We have to talk about the final needle drop.
Needle drop number 9. It's not the final one because there's the post-credits.
The emotional
yeah.
Height of the needle drops, which is Florence and the Machines, Dog Days. Mm-hmm. It's amazing song. I'm a huge fan of Florence and the Machines. Florence specifically.
She's you don't like the machine?
No, fuck the machine. But Florence is an amazing kind of machine, singer.
Steve.
She's an amazing singer. And just the way we can pan and see the little bits of personality where Groot and Rocket are the first two to start dancing because of that shared history that those two characters have. The tearful goodbye between Drax and Mantis as she leaves. We talked about Gamora joining her family. Nebula dancing is funny. Adam Warlock there. And then just like that shot of, you know, because at one point Nebula says, like, I know what you were meant to be. You weren't meant to be a destroyer. You were meant to be a dad. So seeing him kind of being pulled into the dance by the little Juju girls. And then there's that like pause in the music. But then when it picks up, he does like this like weird, goofy, like dad dance.
Yeah.
And then everyone kind of just screams in happiness that they're just happy to be alive and they're together. It's man, brings me to tears every time. It's such a well done sequence.
It's a damn good send off. No notes. And then you get the OG song. Is the post-credit scene for that, you know, with the new Guardians.
I love how the new Guardians are talking about their favorite songs. And then, you know, they hear the whatever the threat, those like weird, creepy wolves that are going to come tear apart this colony or whatever. And Kraglin gets it like, well, I think I can do this if y'all want to hang back.
The arrow. He's like flexing the arrow like, yeah, here we go.
I mean, the arrow is super OP whenever Yondu used it. By the way, this new Guardians is way stronger.
They're overpowered. Overpowered ridiculously.
Yeah, I love it. But yeah, that's Guardians Volume 3. And Sean, thank you so much for joining us. We needed your expertise here. Mm-hmm. Never read any of the comics myself. I doubt Steve has.
I have not.
Steve doesn't read.
I'm illiterate. Yeah.
Well, I love that he thought I was serious. He was like, hey, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with
he
was that.
Just trying to be so
Don't
nice.
Be an ableist. All right.
Well, thank you for having me. And I really chose this movie, I think, because like I told you how I didn't really understand why I wanted to watch Guardians, why I wanted to see that first movie, why Rocket was such a favorite to me. And I think this third movie answers that question after 10 years. I feel like I see in myself so many things that like he's gone through in the background of that. Losing your only family you knew in the beginning, that you were, whether you're socialized to just have them as family or whether they just were, and then having to build everything from scratch from that. Like, that's just gut-wrenching, and it's not easy, and it never is. And, you know, and to see him then, on top of that, make something new out of these random people that he meets. And I've done the same thing throughout my life, being totally honest with that. And, you know, at the same time, he's turning a new leaf at the end of this movie. As we're speaking, I'm about to get a new apartment. I just got a job offer. So it's like, I'm telling you, media comes out when, you know, you need it. It does.
Are you going to be running the Guardians of the Galaxy? Is that what you're telling us?
I'm not running my accounting company, if that's what you're wondering. But no, I don't know if I want to get that far. But my point is that whether you think it's the universe or God or whatever, or coincidence, media comes into your life when you need it. I believe that it's weirdly poetic that this came out when it did and that, you know, life is working out so well and it couldn't be better.
Yeah. And you came into the Streaming Things podcast exactly when it was needed as well. Sean, thank you so much for joining us. I hope all of you enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 as much as we did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look forward to the rest of our streaming Star Wars series. And again, another reminder that The Boys and House of the Dragon is hot on our heels. It's coming in hot.
Hot D.
Hot D.
Hot D.
That's right. I kept trying to work that in somehow. Hot dog. thank you guys for listening. We love you all so very much, but we are out of time. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And I'm Sean.
Now, Yeah,
there we go. We got him.
And this was Streaming Things, streaming Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Happy stream. Hey!
Mom
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.